525,600 minutes. 525,000 moments, oh dear. 525,600 minutes. How do you measure a year?
And how do you measure how much a city has changed in 12 years? That's how long it's been since the musical Rent first opened to critical acclaim in a small East Village theater. And it would be impossible to recognize the city depicted in that show today in many ways. But the production struck such a nerve with theatergoers that it quickly moved up to Broadway, where it went on to win 4 Tonys, a Pulitzer, and bucket loads of profits. Now the show is about to close. They announced it yesterday as interest and box office revenue wane. Joining me now to look at what this end of an era says about the city is Village Voice columnist Michael Musto, who often writes about theater and lived in the East Village at the time that Rent opened. Hi, Michael. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Oh, thank you so much.
Take us back 12 years. What kind of buzz surrounded the show? What kind of issues generated the creation of the show at the time it opened?
This was a show that held a mirror up to the life of bohemians and people living in the East Village, and basically anybody young with an edge or anybody who was kind of sexually frisky. Not since the show Hair in the 60s did a show really capture the life of young people and all their sexualities and dreams and idealisms and angers with this kind of impact. It started off Broadway at the New York Theater Workshop. It immediately got unbelievable raves and was targeted to move to Broadway. And unfortunately, Jonathan Larson, who wrote the show, died, you know, the day of the dress rehearsal off Broadway. And that's one of the real tragedies of the show.
And what was the point that it was making, the central point, about Rent in 1992?
Really, that Rent is this kind of overriding pressure that is on everybody, not just real rent that you have to pay every month, but the figurative rent that you have to pay to society, and how a bunch of people, a kind of band of outsiders in this show, bonded together, both by making the show, and I'm also talking about the characters in the show, and kind of overrode their oppressions with seasons of love, as you just heard in that song.
And I've read that it was meant to be a double meaning, the title Rent, that it was chosen because the other meaning beyond what you pay to live somewhere, it also means torn apart. When something, when a fabric is rent, it's torn apart.
I never got that, I have to say.
You never heard that one.
But I'm not surprised to learn there are new textures there. It's bad enough to just have to pay the rent every month. But and yeah, then when you're torn apart, that's bad too.
And it was supposed to be a modern rendering of Puccini's La Boheme, no?
Yes. There was, you know, Daphne Rubin Vega played the character of Mimi, who was dying, and there were other characters that were dying of AIDS, and it was a very loose rendering of La Boheme, let's put it that way, but enough reference to the Puccini that people can feel very intelligent sitting there and saying, oh, I saw kind of a version of an opera.
And you could say AIDS played the character of TB.
Yes, it did. And an AIDS musical, can you imagine? I mean, the South Park guys made vicious fun of this in one of their movies. Because the idea of an AIDS musical seems kind of bizarre and unusual, but this show would tackle the subject head on. And it did it with such sensitivity that you were totally swept into the characters.
Now, this was before Angels in America, so it was really the first major play to depict lesbian, gay, bisexual, and for that matter, transgender characters back in the early 90s.
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, this is the life that I am faced with and live, you know, these are the types of people that I'm surrounded with night after night. So when this show made it to Broadway, I was really stunned, and I didn't really think it would run for 12 years as it has. Transsexuals and people with AIDS singing and dancing on Broadway, I never saw this as the next cast. But then when I actually saw the show on Broadway, I was so stunned by the power and the beauty of it that I knew it was going to connect to people in a really strong way. And they were brilliant in the way they marketed to young people. Whereas you have Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein now selling $450 seats, Rent had a bunch of $20 seats that they targeted to the young. And that's one of the reasons they kept going. And also they brought in stunt casting. They had people like Joey Fatone from NSYNC and Frenchie Davis from American Idol coming in to take over roles. And so they try to keep it fresh and relevant to new audiences.
And listeners, we have about 10 minutes for your calls on what the play Rent meant to you. 212-433-WNYC. with the announcement yesterday that it's going to close after 12 years. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Give us a call or post about rent to our webpage, WNYC.org, as we talk to the Village Voice's Michael Musto. People saw it over and over again. There was a term that sprung up, rent heads.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jekyll and Hyde was another show that got repeat viewers, Rocky Horror Show, of course, originally. And that's the kind of thing that really helps the show to run. If people are so taken with it that they think, oh, I want to see it again. I want to learn every line. I want to bring my friend and let them enjoy it. That's one of the reasons the show kept going. And I have to say, one of the things that hurt it was the fact that Spring Awakening opened last year and won the Tony. That's a musical based on a Franz Wedekind play, which is also about sexually frisky, rebellious young people. And that took away the rent crowd. Also, there was a stagehand strike on Broadway last year that kind of crippled theater for several months. And it was hard for several shows to recover from that, and Rent was one of them.
Two shows can't have a young demographic on Broadway?
You can, but when one of them is kind of an old war horse that's been around for 12 years, that's the one that's going to suffer.
Yeah. And the economics of Rent are unbelievable. The show cost, from what I've read, $240,000 to produce when it started at the New York Theater Workshop in the East Village. Then it moved up to the Nederlander Theater on Broadway and went on to earn $280 million. So I wonder if, from your perspective, since you didn't think it was going to be a hit, it was a little incongruous to see tourists paying top dollar to come to Times Square and watch a show about poverty and what they may have considered, you know, these tourists from Iowa, deviant sexuality.
Yes, it absolutely was. And it definitely opened their eyes, and the show really helped move society forward in that way. But usually when you think of tourists going to theater, they're going to want to stay with something safe like a Beauty and the Beast or a Cats. And so it was kind of exciting to see them going to something that they would never want to deal with in real life. But suddenly if it's presented on stage and it won a Pulitzer Prize, then it's okay for them. And some of them probably still were a little shaken after the show, but that's a good thing. But the irony doesn't escape me that this is a show about an evil landlord and a bunch of poor people who have to battle him. And then suddenly they have to battle this big landlord on Broadway, and they're not able to pay their rent anymore, and that's why they have to close.
Chris in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
You bet.
Well, what I just wanted to say was I was that part of that young target audience that they first tried to reach when it first reached Broadway. And me and all my friends would actually cut school to, like, go and see it and wait on the $20 line. And it really was, like, a major part of me being introduced to theater. And now, as a grad student, I'm studying theater and I'm working in it. And it really introduced me to what theater could be.
You know, Chris, this means that Jonathan Larson, the composer who, as we mentioned, died on the day of the dress rehearsal, achieved his goal, because his stated goal was to bring musical theater to the MTV generation.
And he did, and he did a great job, and I applaud him for that. And the show will be missed, but it had a great run, and I think it's time.
Chris, thanks for your call. Elise on Long Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elise.
Hey, Brian, I love you. I'm so happy to be talking to you.
Thank you.
My first Rent moment was, besides seeing the show, because I'd seen the show and I loved it, 6 years ago, my daughter was 7 years old and going to day camp. And one afternoon after camp, we're sitting having a frozen yogurt, and she's telling me how she's been listening on the bus with a friend of hers to the soundtrack from Rent.
Huh.
She's seven. I'm thinking, all right, this is going to go towards AIDS. That's where I saw the conversation going.
Now, I'm trying to think about the songs. Is there anything in the
She's very musical, and she had seen a number of Broadway shows by then. She was already taking voice lessons.
Uh-huh.
And also, I'm hearing Seasons of Love in my head, because that's the first thing that comes to mind. So while I'm trying to figure out where it's going to go, she looks up at me with her humongous dark brown eyes, and she says to me, Mommy, as she's eating her frozen yogurt, Mommy, what's a lesbian? And when I recovered and I realized this is a moment that you have to handle, you know, carefully, I said, oh, all right, that's easy. We can talk about that. We talked about our gay friends, and we wondered if we knew any lesbians, and we had that whole conversation. And that was my most momentous Rent moment.
And who knows how many tourists from Kansas had that same discussion with their kids, not realizing they were about to have it when they went to see that show. Hey, Elise, I've got one for you along the same lines, but not pertaining to Rent. When I worked at a summer camp as a counselor, one of the kids, 12-year-old boy, was active in the theater, right? He did the camp plays.
Yeah.
And his parents came on visitor's weekend, and he had been told that he's a He's a thespian, you know. And he ran up to his parents right in front of him. He said, Mom, Dad, I'm a lesbian.
Great. It's great. It's great. So for a second, you know, like I could have felt like a tourist from Kansas. But, you know, then I put myself together and I said, but wait a minute. We know plenty of people, you know, who are living a life that's in rent. Not the bohemian part of the life, but living, you know, a different life than she's used to. And when she thought about it, she said, oh, I do know those guys. And I do know those guys. And it was okay.
Thanks, Elise.
All right, take care.
Keep listening. Don in Manhattan wants to correct something I said. Hi, Don.
Hey, Brian. Listen, we all love Rent, and actually you can't compare the two shows, but just that Angels in America opened in 93 and did not follow Rent. It was, you know, predated Rent by 3 years.
Right. I guess it depends what you count, because I think that Rent opened off-Broadway in 92. Also, I was thinking about the inclusion of transgender characters, which was part of that comment. But Michael Musto, you know, we don't want to start a battle between Rent and Angels in America. But
no, I don't even remember the chronology, frankly, because the 90s are a big blur to me. But they both were landmark shows. By the way, Jodie Foster is the only one who is a lesbian and a thespian. But that's off topic. That's totally off topic.
Carrie in South Orange, you're on WNYC.
Oh, good morning. I'm so happy to be able to talk to you about Rent. It meant so much to my husband and I when we lived in New York. We got to go to the show and see New York the way, I don't know, when you were young and you didn't have any money and you could just go live in New York, and it was like the old neighborhoods with the restaurants, and it was before all the big, you know, the big stores came in. And we lived up at Columbia and we didn't have any money, and we went to see Rent. My husband went a whole bunch of times, and it was just such a picture of the city for us. In the way that the city really isn't anymore. So I'm so sad to hear that it's going to be closing.
Carrie,
I have to get him tickets.
Yeah, really, do it quick. Thanks for your call. And in a way, Michael, maybe the city and the country are returning to the same kind of condition. I mean, you know, what's the headline today? It's about everybody starting to use the R word, recession, and coming on the heels of the foreclosure crisis. And, you know, the decline in housing values. And, of course, there's always a severe rental shortage in New York City. That story is in the papers again this week. So maybe things haven't changed that much, or maybe things are cycling around again to a point where the interest in rent could have been revived.
I think maybe, but I think that in New York, it's different from the rest of the country, and it's a place where, you know, rich young people have co-ops and condos and expensive rentals, and they're doing fine. And the bohemians that populate the show Rent have to move to Williamsburg or New Jersey. So I think the locals here in New York don't even relate to Rent. It's like some kind of, you know, science fiction story.
Right. So if someone were to do a version of Rent for today's generation, it wouldn't be set in the East Village. Maybe it would be set somewhere else.
It would have to be set in the outer boroughs or another state, you know, Rhode Island or something, because the artists really are traveling farther and farther away from New York to get some livable conditions.
Hey, we have 15 seconds just as an addendum. The film version of Rent didn't do as well.
No, and I think that helped put the nail in Rent's coffin the way the producers' movie did for the producers. It was an uninspired version that was a little too literal, didn't work in close-up, and it put out the word that maybe Rent isn't all it's cracked up to be, but of course it was.
Or maybe people wanted to come to New York and see it as a New York thing, but didn't want to go to their theaters across the country. Maybe that was another factor, too. But Village Voice columnist Michael Musto, who often writes about the theater and lived in the East Village at the time that Rent opened. Thanks a lot for coming on with us.
Thank you, Brian.